those of us who lost our mothers young, it really helps us to find older women who can be role models for us for aging, positive role models for aging. Because for most of us, the only role model we have for aging is dying young.
You're listening to the Mother of Reinvention Show, a weekly podcast about midlife motherhood, careers, health, relationships, and more. I'm Megan Francis, a 40-something mom of 5 kids ages teen to young adult. Listen each Thursday as I bring you an interview with an inspiring mother of reinvention, plus some of my thoughts about wellness, self-care, relationships and divorce, big kid parenting, and more. It's all at motherofreinventionshow.com. Keep listening for another episode of the Mother of Reinvention Show. It's what's next for midlife moms. One of the most defining events of my adult life was losing my mom when I was just 22 years old. It's colored everything from my experience as a mom myself to how I've navigated my adult life and really how I think about everything from health and aging to legacy and memory. It's now been 22 years since my mom died, and you might think that those identity issues and that sense of loss would fade over time. And in many ways, it has. But as I've journeyed into midlife, I'm finding that I miss having my mom for a whole new set of reasons. Today, I have two special guests on the show. Hope Edelman, who you heard at the top of the episode, is joining us to talk about her work with women who have lost their mothers and why midlife can be a particularly fraught time for motherless women. Hope is the author of the best-selling book, Motherless Daughters, as well as several follow-up books that deal with grief and mother loss. I've known Hope for years now, and I've found her writing and work to be so helpful in working through my own feelings about navigating adult life without a mom. Hope also facilitates a community specially created for women who've lost their moms, which she'll describe more in this episode. And after talking with Hope, I realized that I really wanted to dig in a little deeper with my own experience of losing and missing my mom. So I invited my sister, Catherine, who you may remember from a previous episode of Mother of Reinvention, to join me for a chat later in the episode. Catherine turns 55 in just a couple of weeks, which is the same age our mom was when she died. And we talk a little about the significance of that age for her and much more. Okay, we've got a lot to get to today. But before I jump into the interviews, I wanted to let you know that next week's episode wraps up season 3 of the Mother of Reinvention show. It's a special episode because Sarah Powers, my good friend and co-host at the Mom Hour, will be interviewing me about my feelings around turning 45 and what I'm looking forward to for the next 5 years of my life, which will lead to me becoming an empty nester at 50. I've got a really special season 4 planned, and that's going to come out in late September. And Sarah and I will talk about that on next week's episode as well, so make sure you tune in. I also wanted to let you know that I'm working hard behind the scenes on a Mother of Reinvention community. This will be a private, safe place where you can connect with other midlife moms and me. If this interests you, head over to the show notes for this episode and click the survey link in the episode notes. It should only take you a few minutes to fill out the survey, and it'll really help me plan this community, which I'm so excited about. Okay, on to my conversation with Hope Edelman. Hi, Hope. Thank you so much for being on the show.
It's great to be here, Megan.
I'm excited about this. I know you and I have, kind of run in the same writerly circles for quite some time. But by the time I met you, your book, Motherless Daughters, was already, I'm going to say, at least 10 years old. So it had been around for quite some time. Mm-hmm. Tell us the journey of how that book came to be.
Well, I was 17 when my mother died. She had advanced breast cancer, and there were no books for girls like me. Mm. I went to the bookstore. I was a reader my whole life. I went to the bookstore to look for a book that would speak to me, and all the books I found assumed that you would be in your 40s or 50s when your mother died.
Yeah.
Because statistically, demographically, that's much more common. And I kept going back to bookstores and libraries for about the next 10 years. Looking for a book. And finally, I was in a graduate writing program in nonfiction, and I was encouraged by some professors to consider writing the book myself. So I wrote the book that I couldn't find. It was really that simple.
Wow. I love that story. And I lost my mom when I was 22. So there's a lot of similarities there. Just like what that experience is like losing your mom so young. And I remember, and I know you had a follow-up book, Motherless Mothers, which really spoke to me because it was like all of those things I didn't think to ask my mom, way before I had kids. Suddenly you're like, oh, I wish I had a mom around that I could ask these questions that just didn't occur to me at all.
You know, I was just thinking about that earlier. I was thinking about how our moms miss all of our life transitions and we miss having them there, you know, our big ones. I mean, your mom might've been there if you went to college and graduated, but my mom didn't even get to see any of her kids graduate from high school.
Wow.
I saw a thread on Twitter yesterday where a woman was saying, I just enrolled my two children in preschool and it costs $2,000 a month each. How does anyone afford this? And the thread, everyone in the thread was saying, well, most people can't. So they rely on family to help them.
Yeah.
And I don't know about you, but I didn't have any family to help me raise my kids. I have two daughters and I was living in Los Angeles. I was born and raised in New York. But I didn't have any family to help me. And my husband didn't have his family lives overseas. So we were really on our own. It was us and whatever paid help we could afford. And so there was the practical part of not having my mom there, the emotional part of not having my mom there, and then the emotional part of becoming an adult and realizing what she had missed out on by not getting to know her grandchildren.
Yeah, there's so much there. So I want to talk a little bit about what I'm noticing in midlife now that I haven't had a mom for over 22 years and how it's really changing. So I'm just going to throw some things out and I would love to hear your commentary either on what you've noticed for yourself or what you've noticed from your community. So one of those things is not being able to talk with my mom about health issues, like things that, again, I wouldn't ever have thought to ask my mom about, her health history when I was a young adult or a teenager. But now I'm like, oh man, there are things that would really have been good to know, or just how she experienced aging. Do you hear that from women in your community, or are you experiencing that yourself?
I do. I hear a lot of women talking about this around childbirth issues. I hear them talking about it around perimenopause and menopause. You know, when did you start feeling symptoms? You lost a mom to a terminal illness, we tend to think of our mothers and health around that crisis event.
Mm-hmm.
But in fact, you know, there are a lot of questions that we could be asking. And in that sense, you know, I think we are a lot like the adopted women that I work with who don't know their health histories because biologically they are disconnected from the woman who birthed them. They don't have access to their health history is what I mean to say.
Yeah.
And so we just don't know. I remember, you know, going to the OBGYN and her asking me how long my mother's labors were, or what her labors and pregnancies were like. And I said, I don't know.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know. My father was an unreliable reporter of that information.
Mm-hmm.
And I just didn't have access to the details.
Yeah. Did your mom even live long enough to go through some of the things that you've, you know, gone through now? And that's another thing I'm imagining. If your mom died in her, say, 30s or early 40s, there's a lot she just never experienced. You would never have even had the opportunity to see it play out, even if you thought to ask or had someone to share that information.
Right. Well, she was 42 when she died. She was premenopausal. And so I didn't get to see her age. I'm now, you know, more than a dozen years older than she got to be. So I feel a lot of the times like I'm flying blind, and I'm the oldest child in my family. So I don't have an older sister to compare myself to either. Like my sister could, you know, look at me 3 years ahead of her and at least have some sense of, you know, what might be coming in 3 years.
Yeah.
No, you know, it skews your perspective on aging when your mom dies really young. How old was your mom, Megan?
She was 55. Yeah. So just starting that, you know, just starting that process, but definitely didn't get very far with it. Yeah.
Right. And so, you know, in my mind at 17, 42 was old.
Yeah.
And that was kind of imprinted on me. You know, I'm 58 now. And I think of myself as a really young 58. I just ran a couple miles last night. You know, I go to yoga. I'm in great health. But I think of myself as old, like really old. Like I have to do a lot of internal messaging to think of I think of myself as physically very healthy, but in terms of numbers and years, that's mainly because it's just so far past 42.
Right.
It has nothing to do. It has no bearing in reality. So those of us who lost our mothers young, it really helps us to find older women who can be role models for us for aging, positive role models for aging, because for most of us, the only role model we have for aging is dying young.
Yeah. And I know my sister is 10 years older. So she, this year will be the age my mom was when she died. And my sister doesn't have any of the health, you know, issues that would lead her to believe that that would be her fate, but she kind of can't let go of it. Like she's really kind of obsessing about that number. And I can see it too. I think I'll be in the same boat when I'm 55.
Yep. It's a major, major rite of passage for women who've lost a mother. Now, lots of women will exceed their mother's ages, but a lot of them will do it in their 70s or their 80s.
Yeah. Yeah.
The women that I work with, it happens in their 30s or 40s or 50s. And we call it crossing the silent threshold, because there really isn't any cultural acknowledgement of what a big deal that is. It's the same for men and their fathers, by the way. Men who lose their fathers when they're young have, you know, it's that same sex identification. We acknowledge when we pass the age of a different sex parent when they died, certainly. And it, you know, it can be a profound transition, but it's a really big deal when it's the same sex parent. It's such a big deal, in fact, that a group of motherless daughters and I developed a ritual that we have online for free, a PDF that, we sort of crowdsourced with a company called Be Ceremonial.
Okay.
With their assistance, a ritual for passing that age or reaching and passing that age. Women tend to have a big emotional response and a lot of fear around their own survival at that time. Mm-hmm. Also, when their children reach the ages they were when their moms died. Are any of your kids 22 yet?
Yeah. So I've had my second son is 22 right now. And when he hit 22, I felt it. And my oldest is 24. When he hit 22, I felt it too. So yeah, for sure.
Absolutely.
Yeah. In fact, my 22-year-old was just a little baby when my mom died. So that was kind of double when he hit 22. And I remembered, you know, that I was his age and he was a little infant, like 6 weeks old. Uh-huh. So just a lot, there was a lot wrapped up there. I love that idea of the ritual. Where would a listener be able to find that? I can link to it in the show notes.
It's at theaftergrief.com and there's a page that says rituals.
Okay.
And there's a ritual for the anniversary of a loved one's death. And there's a ritual for reaching and passing a mother's age at time of death.
All right. We'll definitely link to that. Let's talk about when the relationship with one's mother, you know, could be filed under it's complicated, or when they know that they lost out. And this, I definitely am in this camp where I lost out on the opportunity to see my mom age. And in some ways that's awful. And in some ways I don't think it would have gone well. And so there's that part of me that's like, wow, my life is so much less complicated in a way that is both a relief and also a big loss. Do you hear that from women in your community as well?
I do, because we can't assume that everyone had a mom who would have been there for them during these life transitions. I look at my friends now, some of them have really complicated relationships with moms who are alive, who maybe weren't helpful when they became mothers or when they were going through their own life transitions. We tend to romanticize who our moms might have been. So, you know, the mother of my imagination might well be a much kinder and more helpful mother than my own mother might have been. Although I had a really good mom, I kind of think she would have been around for me. But of course, we can't assume that would be true for everyone.
Right.
So yes, sometimes I do hear women say that the mother that I wish were here or imagine were here may be better than the mother I actually would have had.
Yeah. Wow. And I think for myself, it's like not having her around as a positive or negative influence on my adult decisions, it's like neutral in a way, because she's just gone. So it's like, I didn't get the benefits of having her experience and wisdom to pull from. And that would have been there. I think that would have been great, but I also didn't have the more negative side. And in her case, there was some mental illness and irrationality, a lot of things that would have been going on that would have made my adulthood more complicated. So it's hard now, 22 years later, to look at it and think, okay, what would it really be like? It's all fantasy. Whether I think it would be way better or way worse, it's a made up. I have no idea. I just don't know what it would be.
Right. We're in the imaginal world with that.
Yeah.
Imaginal world can, you know, then be anything that we create.
Right. Yeah. Another thing I think is interesting is most women in my age group, going into, you know, your age range, we're about 13 years apart, are either coming into a sandwich generation situation or have been for a while, or maybe their moms died a little older. And I'm wondering, like, I don't have that. So my father also passed. So I don't have that sandwich generation thing. And there's a part of me that feels some guilt about that. But also I look at my friends who are getting into that place and I'm like, yeah, but they've got their own stressors and they're, and then I feel guilt about that. Like I feel guilt about the relief of knowing I don't have to go through that, right, which is kind of like a complicated place to be mentally. Do you hear that from other moms in your community?
Absolutely. And I feel it myself. My father died when I was 40. So I lost both of my parents pretty young, which means that now I don't have them to take care of or you know, have to make accommodations for, like so many of my friends are having to do right now. That's a piece of adulthood that I just, another piece of adulthood that I'm just not getting to experience. But it's one that I do feel some relief around because I see how much they're struggling. So yes, I do hear that. Yeah. I don't personally really feel any guilt around that because I experienced my hardships earlier and they're experiencing them now. You know, nobody gets a free ride in this life.
Yeah.
But I do feel a sense of relief, but also, you know, a bit of loss as well, because I, you know, given a choice, which of course we didn't have, Megan, but given a choice, I would much rather have had them around and have to take care of them now than to have not had them for all of these years.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And it wasn't either of our choices to make. And we can look at some of, you know, we, like you said, no one gets a fair deal or no one gets a free pass. And it's okay to recognize some of the things that maybe made your life a little easier, because a lot of it is a big loss, you know, and so much loss that we experience. It's not like we got away without having that. It just happened at a different time.
Right.
You mentioned, I think early in the conversation, something about almost having like surrogate mothers or substitute moms or people who can take that place in, right, in one's life. That's something at midlife I have found myself missing and not really sure. I have a couple of aunts who I'm on the closer side to, but I don't really have that in my life. I'm curious if you do, or if you see other women in your communities nurture those relationships and how they're doing it.
Well, in various times in my life, I've had friends, I think, who have been about maybe 10 or 12 years older who have filled that role for me in various ways. Generally, you know, a group of friends who have, yeah, who have filled various needs. You know, it's a tricky proposition because when women put a lot of their emotional needs that they would normally have, you know, or experience with a mom onto a relationship that's not a mother-daughter relationship, they often find themselves in territory that they didn't expect, or find themselves maybe being a little disappointed when they discover that a relationship can't bear that weight. Mm. But others do find good mentors. And we're looking really for life mentors, emotional mentors, not professional mentors, you know, not in the sense, yeah, of the word as usually used. We're looking for like elders who can guide us. The Motherless Daughters community that has been growing, that is now worldwide, that has weekly calls and retreats and different activities, is intergenerational. And I think within that community, the younger women find a lot of support from the older women. And when we have live retreats, which we've gotten back to post-COVID, they can range, women in a group can range in age from mid-20s all the way up to late 70s or early 80s. And I see some really beautiful friendships forming there, both among peers and among the generations. So the older women are really eager to help the younger women. The younger women just soak up the information from the older women. And that's really rewarding to see, because that's, you know, one of the reasons that the community formed to begin with.
Yeah. And I love that ability to kind of navigate that in a way that works for you. And maybe that online, it might take a little of the weight out of it, you know, the weightiness of those in real life relationships where they do become, I don't know, I could see them being a little bit loaded, like you said.
You know, yes, especially if they form as adults and you've got two fully formed people with, right, all of their history and all of their baggage, you know, coming into this relationship. But there's a wonderful nonprofit. Have you heard of Empower Her? They're based in Boston, and they are our mentorship program for adult women who've lost their moms being paired with young girls who've lost their moms, young, school age and teenagers into early 20s. And it's modeled on the Big Brother, Big Sister program, but focused around mother loss. They're about to expand into all children who've lost a parent, either a mother or a father. Oh, that's
cool. No, I hadn't heard of that, but that is neat.
But those are relationships that are supervised in the beginning and then can, you know, be fostered over a lifetime. They've only been around, I think, for maybe 7 years. So, it's, you know, we don't know if these relationships will be lifelong, but something like that certainly could be. And that's a mentor relationship that begins with the intention of being a mentor relationship.
Right. Yes.
Both parties have consented to do that from the start, you know, so the expectations are really clear.
Yeah. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Both parties know that's what they're doing, and that's the expectation they're both working toward.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'm thinking, you know, in my life, just a few weeks ago, I had my sister-in-law, who I've known since high school. She married my brother after college, and her mom. So I've known her mom for 30 years. And I just asked her if she would come over and look at my yard with me to help me make some gardening decisions. And she came over and, you know, walked around my yard and said a few things and then said, I don't feel like I've been very helpful. And I thought, no, it was just helpful to have you here because I don't have, you know, that person who has done this, who would just walk around and look at it with me. She's not a professional gardener. It's not like she didn't give me a list of things to do, but it was like one little touch point, and it doesn't necessarily have to be more than that. I don't now need to call her all the time and ask her to babysit my kids. Like that's very, it's like it had it, it's like filling in my network with lots of different people who can fill that mentor, elder woman role.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I wonder what you hear from women in your community who are becoming motherless daughters later in life. You know, you and I both had the experience of having this happen to us young. How is it different when it's a woman in her late 30s, early 40s, into their 50s, 60s? I mean, how are they differently experiencing this?
Oh, wow. That's a big question.
Yeah.
Right? Because those are completely different developmental periods than if you were 6 or 12, for example. On the community calls that we do every Tuesday and Thursday, which women sign up for, and they're topical, and every week we have a new topic to discuss together. We do not segregate or, you know, distinguish between early loss and adult loss. At the Motherless Daughters retreats, we do for a very specific reason, because it's such a different type of loss. And a Motherless Daughters retreat, which is a 4-day like intensive encounter, let's say, you know, a gathering of women where we do different activities and exercises. These women really want to meet other women who lost moms at the same age that they did and know what it was like to go through school without a mom, to go off to college without a mom, to start your first job without your mom. Those who were adults have had a really different experience. So we do early loss retreats up to age 21, retreats for women who were in their 20s, because that's such a different developmental period, especially for you in your 20s. You had your kids, you know, you launched your adult life very early. And then we do another one for adult mother loss. But in the calls, they're mixed together so we can really see what some of the differences are. I mean, if you're a young person, you know, a child or a teenager, when your mom dies, your personality is still developing. So that loss becomes a fundamental part of your identity. If you lose a mom in your 30s, you're already pretty fully formed. Mm-hmm. And that is not to say that it's not a devastating loss, because it is, just in a different way. Because your mom's been there maybe every day for you for 37 years, and you don't know how to exist in the world without her. And here you have to figure it out as an adult. Whereas when you're younger, you're much more dependent on her, and your emotional needs need to be met somewhere else. Whereas as an adult, ideally, you know, your emotional needs are spread out among your peer group, partner, and your family of origin, if you have a good relationship with them. So those are just some of the differences, but there are lots.
Yeah, I can imagine that. I would love to hear a little more about what you have coming up. I know we can link to some of the retreats and things that you were talking about in the show notes, but you mentioned that you've got a group that's kind of a mix, and then you've got more specialized breakout groups. What does that look like over the course of the year in your community?
Well, the calls are every Tuesday and Thursday. Tuesday, it's in the evenings, and Thursday, it's in the morning or afternoon, depending on your time zone. That's so on Thursday, women in Europe can join the calls. So we have women coming in from the UK and from Israel and from Germany and Switzerland. The calls are an hour and a half. We have an hour of focused discussion and then a half hour of open discussion, sometimes with breakout rooms so that you can be, you know, in a smaller conversation with women who share something in common with you. Like your mom died within the past year, for example. We have a number of women whose loss is very recent, or maybe mother loss up to age 12, or women who are childless by choice or circumstance are some of the breakout rooms that where we might have discussions. And so that those happen every week. It's a subscription model. It's $59 a month and there's four calls and the women are a real community. I mean, and they're starting to meet offline as well in person as travel allows. And then, in the course of a year, there are typically about 4 to 6 in-person retreats that run from a Thursday to a Sunday. They take place either in the Los Angeles area where I live or at a retreat center in Connecticut. And those are really intensives, where intensive experiences. We start Thursday just before dinner and we end Sunday after lunch. And we stay in the same place and we eat our meals together and we do activities and we have discussions and we have a yoga class and we do meditations. And it's an opportunity to be in the company of other women who really get it, because a lot of us feel like the odd woman out when we sit in a room of women. And we can't always even contribute to the conversation because they might be talking about their moms or their relationships with their moms, and we don't really have anything to add. And saying, my mom died when I was 17 is a real conversation stopper.
Yes, it is.
We don't want to say that.
Right. But
sitting in a room with women who understand, you know, the conversation starts and it just doesn't stop for 4 days. It's really extraordinary to see. And then these groups stay in touch with each other afterwards too. And, you know, they have reunions and they get together and support each other through life milestones. One of the most beautiful stories that I encountered was one of the women in the group was engaged when she came to the retreat. And a number of months later, she, on the Facebook page, the group Facebook page, posted that she was just feeling really sad and was looking for some sisterly, you know, love, because she was going shopping for her wedding dress that day. And the friend that was going with her was sick, and now she was going to have to go alone. And, you know, within like 30 minutes, several of the women who lived near her said, oh, girlfriend, that's not happening. Send us the address of the store and the time and we'll be there.
Wow.
And they met her there and shopped for her wedding dress with her. And so that kind of support continues even after the retreats.
Those women in that community know what they know what's needed. It's not like, in the case of the woman getting married, the member getting married, she didn't have to go to her girlfriends and say, hey, by the way, it really sucks to not have a mom. When you're shopping for a wedding dress, she had someone who just understood and didn't, you know, she didn't need to explain herself. And I think that's really beautiful.
Exactly. That's what I mean about being in the company of women who get it. These women really understood it. And, you know, another woman talks about, who was at one of the retreats, talked about getting married, and she had invited some of the women that she was really close with from her retreat to her wedding. And she said before the ceremony, she was in the back, you know, she was waiting for the ceremony to start, and she was feeling really sad and really nervous and feeling like, I don't know that I can do this without my mom. And then the two of the women from the retreat showed up and came back to see her beforehand. And she said the moment she saw them, she thought, oh yeah, I can do this because I have that support. And that's just such a lovely story. It makes me really grateful that, you know, this community has come together and supports each other in the way that they do.
Well, Hope, thank you so much for this interview. I know there's just so many things that go into loss of a mom, and especially as you're heading into midlife. So definitely, if you're listening and that's the position that you're in, check out the links that we'll have in the show notes. I am curious if you think, like, is like the one place to go that has the most information, where would you say to send someone?
Motherlessdaughters.com.
Motherlessdaughters.com.
We've got everything centralized there.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. Well, thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Megan. It's been a pleasure talking to you.
Oh, that was such a great conversation with Hope Edelman, author of Motherless Daughters. And right after we got off our call, I texted my sister, Catherine, and I said, I want to talk to you for this episode. Catherine's 10 years older than me, so when our mom died, she was 32. Catherine also had a major health scare at 50, which we talked about at length in episode 21, and I'll link that up in the show notes. And like I mentioned in my conversation with Hope, Catherine's turning 55 in just a couple of weeks, which she's been having some feelings about. I'll get to that conversation in just a moment, but first I wanted to welcome back this episode's sponsor, Vionic. Vionic is the ridiculously comfortable footwear brand that I've been raving about for years. Vionics come in a huge variety of styles, from casual sneakers and flip-flops to dressy flats and heels. And not only are these shoes comfortable enough to keep you moving all day, but they are so cute too. I've been loving my Clarita wedges this summer. They've got a fun woven style with a stacked heel that's the perfect height to dress up jeans or wear to a Sunday brunch. And they're seriously the most comfortable wedges I've ever worn. I got them in brown, but there's also a summery cream color that would be so fun. With Vionic's 30-day wear test, there's no reason not to try them out. And I'm going to get you free shipping to try Vionics for yourself. Go to vionicshoes.com and use promo code MORE, M-O-R. Again, that's V-I-O-N-I-C shoes.com and use the code M-O-R, MORE for free shipping. Okay, back to the show and my conversation about being motherless at midlife with my sister, Catherine Francis.
Well, hey, Catherine, thanks for being on the show again.
Well, sure. This is always fun.
It is fun. So, you know, I talked with Hope Edelman about her book, Motherless Daughters, and well, she's got a whole bunch of books, but that was the one that sort of brought her into this world of writing about and now creating a community around women who have lost their moms. And of course, when you're in midlife, people are losing their moms all the time. I think we have a bit of a different story in that we lost our moms young. I was 22, you were 32, and she was 55. So a little bit of a different experience than a lot of women have. So I'm actually going to ask you, Catherine, a few of the same questions, I guess, that I posed to Hope so that we can talk about it from our perspective. And I especially want to hear your perspective. So,
all right.
One of the things that I noticed is that as I'm coming into midlife, you know, losing your mom when you're in your early 20s or even early 30s, there's a lot of things you maybe never thought to ask. You never got around to. Maybe you already had kids by the time she died. I only had my first two, but your kids were getting older. So maybe you got some of that motherhood experience, but then you get into midlife and you're like, oh man, it would have been nice to know when she experienced menopause or what her experience of health was, or even her family's health background, because I don't feel like we have a really strong grasp on that. So what do you feel about that? Like, have you had that same experience where you feel that gap?
Oh, by heavens. For the last year, this has been foremost in my mind. And also, interestingly, I've been thinking about this a lot because I'm turning 55, which is the year mom died.
Yeah.
The age, and I cannot believe it. When I, you know, 55 didn't seem old to me in my 30s, but at least I thought, well, that's an older person. And now I'm that age.
Right.
And I think it's kind of getting to me in a way that I'm surprised by. I didn't expect to think about this so much, thinking about, holy crap, mom died at the age that I am or am soon to be. And yes, through this whole last year, a million times, I have felt a little almost ripped off because I thought, man, mom, you know, I never got to ask you. I don't even know how old mom was when she went through menopause. I really don't. She never talked about it. And I guess maybe we're lucky in that way. And most of our sort of reproductive functioning in our family, things are normal enough that it's not, you know, a big point of conversation. But I have no idea how old mom was. If she was fully menopausal when she died, I don't know.
Yeah.
And I think it's weird that I don't know and can't ask. And it's sad to me.
Yeah, it is. And, you know, it's funny, like, I'm thinking back to some conversations every now and then, like a little blip, and it's been now 22 years since mom died. So even my memories around the things that she might've mentioned are foggy and probably not all that accurate. But one thing I remember her offhand mentioning to me once was that she had had some kind of a gynecological procedure of some sort. And I don't, like, later I thought, well, maybe because I had a hysterectomy for cervical cancer. And I swear she had said something about having to have like a leap or something like that, like something you would do for like an abnormal pap or some abnormal cells. I remember her saying something about that, but it was way before I needed to know. So then later when I was going through that, I was like, well, I guess she had something. I just remember that she said she had something happen. I don't have any memory of what it was. And mom never made a big deal about stuff like that. So,
correct.
You know, it was like, you know, she would be very just like kind of, oh, by the way, this happened. So yeah. Hope and I actually did also talk about the fact that you were turning 55. And I can't remember now at the top of my head, but there's a name for that. Like the year that you the same sex parent that you turned the age they died. And she talked about what a big deal that is and how they have, I believe on the, her site, Motherless Daughters, a whole like ritual around that. So I'll have
Okay. I'm going to look that up. Yes. Yeah. I'm all in.
Yeah.
Wow. Because it's surprisingly, poignant. I cannot believe how I feel like I'm reacting to this.
Well, and another thing that I think is interesting is that mom is frozen in time at that age. Mm-hmm. So you have literally no example of anything past that age. So it's like you could almost feel like you don't exist past that age in a weird way. And I don't know, like what do you even have? No, not to be a downer, but like you don't have any example for better or for worse. And that's another thing that we mentioned in the interview was like seeing mom as an example of aging. I put in quotes, it's complicated. Like it probably wouldn't have gone down that well, but you can have a little fantasy around what it might have been like. Like, would she have been really chipper and like, you know, taken on the travails of getting older with a great attitude? I could kind of see that at the same time. It's complicated because mentally she wasn't well. So it's like, which one would we have gotten? Maybe both.
Sure. And I'm lucky enough, you know, my mother-in-law is mom's age roughly in her early 70s and vibrant and active and all of the thing, you know, age positive and all of that. And so I think, would that have been mom and how wonderful it would have been, you know, if it would have been.
Right. Yeah. And maybe there's a little magical thinking in there.
Which is
convenient. I mean, that is one of the convenient things about losing a parent early is that you can think all kinds of magical things about how it might have been. When you see other friends your age or in this sort of age range talking about the stress of watching their parents get older or the sandwich generation thing or just being annoyed at their parents as they get older.
It's real.
Yeah. Like, how does that feel to you? I know for me, sometimes there's like a weird mix of like relief that I don't have to deal with it, guilt that I feel relieved that I don't have to deal with it, and then also kind of like an inability to connect with those people because I'm like, well, you know, it's like that between... It's between must be nice that that's a problem you have, and I'm kind of glad I don't have that problem. And I can get all tangled up in my feels about that.
I agree with you 100%. I am dealing with, I know many women my age who are dealing now with older parents and mostly, unfortunately, sicker older parents. Not exclusively, though. Some are, you know, and still in wonderful health and active and fun and, but I feel the same way when I hear about a lot of women who are, you know, working from home, but their home is now their parents' home.
Yeah.
You know, caring for them. And during the day, instead of small children, they're caring for parents while they're at work and they're trying to keep them company and take them to appointments and all of that. And so your feelings of feeling, you know, again, a little ripped off because you don't have a parent, but also feeling relief that, you know, relief maybe even for her sake. I mean, this is not, it's not a pleasant end of life that we give people by and large, I feel like in this country, and it's hard, hard on everyone.
Yeah. Another thing I think about a lot is, so for the past 22 years, we haven't had mom's influence in our adult decisions, which includes a lot of parenting decisions, and now would be trickling down to her grandkids, right? So their decisions she would have an opinion about in a positive or negative way. So we haven't had that. And now going forward and like modeling what our next like lives are going to look like, our empty nest lives, let's say, we also don't have her opinion or influence to grapple with there. And I wonder how you feel about how that's played out as when you were a young mom raising kids, how it felt then and how it feels now looking forward.
Well, that's a good question. And you know, I do feel when my kids were younger, especially, and my friends' kids were of the same age and, you know, they all had grandparents that they were hanging out with and showing up for games and all of that. And that just was not available. And I felt a little miffed that, you know, my kids didn't have that opportunity. You know, we were lucky that we had our grandmother live a very long time. So I do feel like we've got some grandmother type experience. You know, I know how a grandmother is. But it's, I don't know. I don't really know how to answer that. I don't know how it's going to affect things going forward. We didn't see our mother live an older person life.
Right.
And, you know, even when she died, it was still very much a midlife. She was still working, trying to cobble together a life, you know, a bill paying life. It wasn't ever a generous, abundant
she
retirement
wasn't looking
or anything
to retiring in Florida or something like that.
Right,
like she
right.
was still figuring life out. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And so, you know, that's hard.
Yeah. And I think that I also think that mom would be, for all of her faults, would be a real cheerleader for the kinds of lives that we're, you know, trying to carve out at this age. And that's really the ripoff, right?
Yes. And I've thought about that a million times. Like when I was over at your house and saw your chickens and I thought, what, mom would love this.
Yeah.
She would have loved the life. I feel like that both of us have put together for ourselves.
Yeah, I agree.
And, you know, and be enjoying it. Or I would like to think, maybe again, that's a little magical thinking. But in my mind, I think, boy, mom would be loving this life.
Yeah. Yeah. And
hanging out with us.
And hanging out with us. Yeah. I think that's one of the hardest things is to separate like the loss of the actual person and what that actual, how that actual person would experience us and how we would experience her and all of that. And then there's the loss of the more sort of, theoretical having a mom, having a grandma for the kids, there's that theoretical person. One can be not replaced, but you can find surrogates for, and the other one cannot, you know? So nobody can replace the individual that was mom, but we can try to put together a life where we have older women around us and people to, like you were saying about Eric's mom and all of those things. And I wonder if you've been intentional about that or if you've found yourself maybe not intentionally, but finding yourself gravitating toward relationships with older women and then being like, oh, look,
I would say that is true for sure. That is true for sure. And I'm very pleased with the women that are around me who are older, most of whom I always laugh and say, you know, we'll be talking, Eric and I, or the kids and I will say, golly, do you even know how old so-and-so is? You know, and you realize, golly, they're 10, 20 years older than I am. But they're people who are aging so positively that you just don't even think of them as an age. And so, yes, I'm very pleased with the family of older women that I have in my life. It's great. It's great. The thing that I miss, I think, the most is not knowing for sure how to tell the kids, how to make sure that they know maybe what part of what we do is like mom.
Yeah.
You know, they knew our dad for a while and he also died pretty young in our lives, but mom, they really don't have, even though my kids were older and surprisingly, Mario reminded me, for example, a couple weeks ago when we went to see the new Jurassic Park movie that he had seen the first Jurassic Park with mom.
Oh, wow.
I
don't even think of her as like being in pop culture times. Like me, it feels so removed. Yeah. Yeah.
Right. And he was a little kid. Yeah. And I think what a great, and he has that memory that, you know, was a little surprising, very surprising to me. I had no idea they ever saw a movie together, period, much less Jurassic Park.
Yeah.
And I was so pleased because they don't have any of that. And I wish they knew like I said, what part of my life, what kind of your life, your chickens, whatever it would be like a mom influence.
Yeah. Well, and that's,
and there's a lot of that.
There's a lot of that. And I guess the only thing we can just keep talking about it really, because there's no other way. I mean, there's no other way. It's, and we can only talk about it from the reality that we think, like our version of reality, which is not even real.
Right.
Like it's just, it's the magical thinking plus the might've been, should've been, would've been, could've been all that. And that's life. But I think it still has some value and somewhere there's still some essence that is the true, like what would have been true, even if not all of it would have been.
Yeah.
I guess I would ask you just to wrap up. If someone is listening to this and either is coming into a place where they're feeling either they've lost their mom young like we did, or maybe they just lost their mom and they're coming into this place of saying, like, I just now don't have a mentor to look to, or someone who's who can kind of take on, and not one person, but like you said, that collection of women and examples. How have you created that in your life? How do you continue to create that in your life?
Well, you know, I would like to think it was very intentional, but of course, a lot of it is luck.
Yeah.
A lot of it is just, you know, being open to people of all ages.
Yeah.
I think it's still very easy between 45 and 55, especially, I think, to not want to project yourself out too far.
Yeah.
You're already a little nervous. Why do I want to hang around with, you know, 75-year-old women? You know, just because that's a self-protection.
I totally know. And like in the yoga community is full of older, awesome women who like can do things I can't even think about doing. But a little part of me is like, I mean, like, do I want to hang out with people who are 2.5 decades older than me? I don't.
Yes,
and
that's exactly what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
Yes. So to keep yourself open to that, because it not only is it just, you know, it's important, but you may miss out, like you say, on somebody who's super, you will miss out.
Yes.
On somebody who's super awesome and just maybe because you just feel like, oh, you know, I'm not 75 yet. I don't need a 75-year-old friend.
But you will be, you know, hopefully.
Well, you will be. You definitely will be. And you don't know. These women may be just exactly who you need to have around you. And that sort of psychological hurdle of who your friends should be.
Yeah.
So if I was somebody who's coming off of this new, you know, it's not a matter of replacing your mother or, you know, trying to find someone else to be your mom. You know, you don't want a dependent situation.
Right. They don't want that either, I'm sure.
It'll go bad. Exactly.
Yeah.
Because hopefully they're too busy.
Right.
And they're too active and too full of a life
to
become your mom. But they can definitely become your friend and definitely have something to share, because you know, the older I get, the more value I see in getting older.
Yeah.
And what a lucky privilege it is, you know, to get older and older and know more and more, and you know, the people that have that age deserve our time and our attention. So and I don't want to sound patronizing. Not every 75, there's still probably a lot of ding dongs out there, or people, you know, who just aren't your people. Well, or you don't, you know, you always think, I thought when I was 55, I'd have everything together. And while it's a lot better, you know, you still are kind of just a person trying to make your way, figure things out, make decisions. And when I'm 75, it'll hopefully be the same growth. And if that's what you're seeing in somebody else, that's terrific. You're seeing somebody at 75 who's still saying, I don't know what I want to do when I grow up.
Which is way better than I'm done.
Correct.
Yes.
Yes. Yes.
Never mind.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah.
Exactly. So.
Well, I appreciate that advice. I think that people listening will take glean a lot from that, because I know that I have found myself being accidentally, not even ageist, more just like, that's not for me, but it is for me, because that's where I'm going. That's where we're all going. Right. So. Well, thank you, Catherine. This has been great. I love talking about this stuff with you, and I will see you next week. We're going to be up north together. So looking forward to it.
Yay. All right. Thanks, Meg.
Thanks so much for listening to this episode of the Mother of Reinvention Show. As a reminder, the show notes for this episode are jam-packed with good stuff. So you're going to want to look for the show notes to episode 38, wherever you get your podcasts, or at motherofreinventionshow.com to find all those resources, including that ritual for women turning the same age their mothers were when they died that Hope Edelman mentioned, and the episode where my sister Catherine shares about how she's embracing her 50s after a major health scare 5 years ago. Also, don't forget to take the survey about the Mother of Reinvention community, which I am planning to kick off this fall, and that'll also be in those show notes. Your feedback will be so helpful. Just go to motherofreinventionshow.com and look for episode 38. Okay, I'll be back next Thursday with the last episode of season 3, a chat with my friend and co-host at the Mom Hour, Sarah Powers, to discuss my upcoming 45th birthday and how I'm looking forward to what's next. We'll talk to you then.